Hi, this is comedian Liz Blanc, and you're listening to The Default Setting with Jess Falstick and Gigi Chick, presented by Above Below Entertainment.
The default setting where we find out what makes you tick because we have ways of making you talk. I'm your host, Jess Falstick, and we have a special guest co-host today. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. Hi, this is BJ Colangelo. You may remember me from previous episode of not being able to sugarcoat anything.
I was like, I just realized, shit, we didn't like rehearse this or practice like how I was going to introduce BJ. And I was like, oh, shit.
Well, Gigi's is not here.
Gigi's in Mexico because fuck that bitch. She was sick, actually, for the end of the last season. She was sick for that. So, yeah, I know. I feel like she should be like worried that her position is in imminent danger because all these people have
Well, you've been replaced. Sorry about it.
Sorry, I guess you're in Mexico. You snooze, you lose. Today, our guest is photographer and, what would we say, CEO of Brightbox Media.
Sure.
Mr. Rustin McCann, hello.
I am Brightbox Media.
You are Brightbox Media. And Rustin's default setting is, you said perspective.
What?
Is that perspective, your default
setting? My default setting?
Yeah. This is the conversation we had over DM. We didn't really dig.
Well, you told me that's my topic.
Oh, okay. And we talked about it like 2 months ago, you were like, oh, I want to talk about perspective.
I don't remember that. But that sounds like something I would say.
It's all documented via DM.
I definitely think about perspective a lot.
Yeah. No, when you say perspective, what do you mean by that?
Well, it's just, you know, when I think being a photographer is very similar in the way you see the world as a comedian, in that you're kind of looking for like the hidden truths everywhere. And so there's that element of like, what's really going on, you know, like, and then even if you're like in all the scenes, like I am, I'm still operating on the edges because I'm trying to see what's really happening.
So when you say perspective, it's more of like a, like an aesthetic, physical perspective sort of thing, or does it sort of trickle into more of like a,
I think it's just a mindset of always trying to figure out like what's really happening.
Okay. And when, I mean, so what we usually do is we talk about like how far back you sort of assess that, like, like, do you have a knack for perspective? Is it something you learned?
I think it's a combination of like all, you know, I'm an only child. Okay. And a single mom. So it's like a lot of alone time.
Yeah.
Growing up. And so it's a lot of like, I wonder what's going on over there. And then just looking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, when you're like through, like basically like from 4 until 8.
Yeah. Oh, from ages. I was like, from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. What's going on then? I mean, I know it's like the golden hour.
Every day,
like,
yeah. Just staring at people eating dinner.
Look
and
at that.
And then you have Instagram, which is exactly that.
Well, it's weird now because everyone can be a photographer all the time. And mm-hmm. So it's like now I'm in this position of having to rethink, like, what is my role, you know, as an artist when everyone can document everything all the time? What do you have to start looking for that's different?
Sure. Can you come up with any answer?
And when I figure it out, I'll let you know.
I had that same discussion with a makeup artist earlier today about Instagram specifically, because now there are so many people that can just use this platform and share what they know. And now a lot of these artistic forms like photography or filmmaking or makeup artistry or painting, any of it, you can learn from the pros because it's all just there at your fingertips. Mm-hmm. People don't have to invest, you know, years and years of education and money into it anymore because it's there in your pocket.
Well, and from your perspective as a photographer, does that make you kind of resentful that you've had to work really hard at this thing and now everybody can kind of do it? Or?
No, because it's like, I mean, the whole point of photography is to make being a creative person easier to do. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, painting was like the big thing. And then photography sort of was like, well, how can we better render the world around us? Mm-hmm. And so the technological aspects of photography are really what drive innovation. So it's all about making it easier. Mm-hmm. Because it used to be, you know, wet chemicals on a glass negative. Sure. And now it's digital.
Have you ever done any of that stuff?
I have. I haven't made tin types or glass negatives. I have friends who do.
Okay. Does it seem really fucking hard, or
it's just labor intensive, and okay. You have to. It's like, I mean, it's a lot more scientific because you're dealing with silver.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So you can, like, straight up get chemicals.
Colloidal silver. Yeah, my friend Dave Adams, who is from Cleveland, he's, like, really, really good at it. Mm-hmm. He teaches workshops. And he makes, like, his own cameras.
Okay.
I've done albumin prints, which is when you make a – before – So they used to use egg whites to bind.
I was going
to
say, is that like egg whites, albumin? Yeah.
They used to use egg whites to bind the silver to paper so that then when you developed it, it would be bound to the egg whites. And actually much more archival than gelatin, which is what's like the current.
Right. Because I feel like whenever I go to like photography exhibits at the museum, it's always like gelatin.
Silver gelatin print.
Interesting. So is that like, so that captures the image and it's like it's a surface on which the image sort of. Land. I mean, I don't understand anything about. I mean, you both do photography and cinematography, so you probably know way more.
But everything I do is digital.
It's digital.
I've gotten to play with like 16mm film, but okay. I've not gotten to actually
develop and make it.
Like that, just it gets sent off somewhere else, and someone else does it for me.
Gotcha.
Yeah. It's been about 10 years since I made a print in the
dark. Everything's been digital in the last 10 years that you've worked with.
Well, I shoot film still, but then I have it scanned.
Oh, okay.
But I don't like the way digital prints look. Mm-hmm. So it's this weird thing where it's like, well, it's a lot easier to make digital prints. Mm-hmm. But there's something about it that's not there for me.
Sure.
But what happens when you make a photograph onto silver is that, you know, silver is naturally light sensitive.
Okay.
And so basically it's you have the silver salt that is bound to the paper, some kind of substrate, mm-hmm. Gelatin or albumin or... And now it's like plastic, which is what like a resin-coated RC paper is called.
Okay.
And that's like – so that like traps the silver particles. And then when it's exposed to light, it changes the chemical composition of the silver. And then it's fixed – it's developed and then fixed with chemicals. So you've got all these – like it's like an actual physical change to the substrate. And that's the image.
Are you self-taught?
No. I have a degree in studio art, and I have a master's degree in photography.
Very cool. So did you decide, kind of just from that whole thing you mentioned as a kid, kind of wondering, like, what are people doing over there? Is that kind of what led you to wanting to capture sort of instances and things like that? Or how did that all...
Well, I always wanted to be a cartoonist.
Oh, okay.
And draw comics.
Mm-hmm.
But I was not good at that. And so...
Do you still like to draw?
I doodle, you know, but it's like...
It just wasn't... You didn't feel like you were good enough to really...
I'm not good enough. Okay. I mean, like, you know, there's only so much... You practice, and then it's like, it's not there.
Yeah.
But, you know, in the fine arts, I went to Oberlin, which is a liberal arts college, so...
Sure.
And my mom was like, you can't go to art school for college, because...
She wanted you to go to, like...
She's like, you're going to have to learn some stuff.
Okay. Because,
like, there's, you know, jobs.
Okay.
So I went to liberal arts school. So I could get a bunch of other useless knowledge that is not helpful, in addition to my photographic training.
But I would say I always like to, I always like to fluff my guests from the perspective of like, you're at least, you're making it work. Like a lot of people go to school and get a liberal arts degree and then they don't really do much with it. And you're fucking going
well, you know, you have to. I mean, it's also a lot of like, you know... When I went to school, it was like you go to school, you go to college, and you get a job in your field. And that's mm-hmm. just the path that we were on. And then it turns out, oh, no, that was all a lie so that banks could make money off of student loans.
It's crazy to me how just in like 20 years, like growing up, my parents were like, you have to fucking go to college.
Yeah.
They were like, we struggled so hard from not going to college. Like, you guys have to fucking go. And how quickly everything has flipped already to you don't need
well, now
to
there's,
go to
there's
yeah.
people
college.
Who are demanding their tuitions refunded.
Right.
Columbia Art School.
Mm-hmm.
It's like all the students are like, this is not worth the money.
Yeah.
John Mulaney has a bit in his new special about
it. It's fantastic.
It's so good.
Somebody came through Cleveland and
so much.
It's just about how colleges ask for donations after you've graduated. And it's like, I just gave you $120,000.
And I'm still paying you and will be
right.
until I'm dead. Yeah.
The most fiscally irresponsible thing I ever did. Well, Granted, I majored in musical theater, so dumb decision.
But you're
there.
Making that happen too.
I am making
that's
it happen.
Thing.
That is true.
I don't have fucking deadbeats
but
on the show.
I don't make enough. I don't make enough money in that field to constitute having that degree.
Yeah.
Right.
At all, like it's.
Well, you're also a baby still, so you have time. And I think you guys are all younger than me. I think you and I are the exact same age.
I'm 35.
Yeah, so I just turned
35. Yeah, I'm a small child. but like the two most fiscally irresponsible things I ever did were go to college and not die of cancer. Like, bad moves. Should have just not gone and died.
And
it would have been great. I'd have no debt.
But you wouldn't be here to enjoy it.
But instead, I owe a house.
You chose life.
I chose life, and it was a bad decision.
You're like, you know what? I'm even more pro-choice than I used
God,
to be.
It's terrible.
Choosing life is never great.
Oy vey.
So you went to school for photography, and I mean, so did you, when you went into school, did you immediately know, like, when you went into school you were going to do photography, or were you still kind of on the wanted to be a cartoonist kick, or when did that sort of fade away?
Man, I don't, let's see. I think I was like, well, I want to do art, but I know that that's not, like, how you live.
Sure.
And so I was going to do computer science.
Ooh.
And then,
how practical.
I know.
But I was good at it. You know, it was one of those things where in high school I was a good student, but I had no idea what I wanted to do with my life.
Okay.
And, you know, in a certain aspect of like being an overachiever, mm-hmm. Like it's like you don't know what to do because none of it's fun. You're just good at school, you know, and then it's like, am I supposed to do – I don't know even really like what makes money in the world, you know, when you're 17.
Right.
It's like – I guess I'll follow my dreams. but then I was like, well, I got something practical like computer science, but then it was so boring, like just soul crushing. Like the most fun I had was just staying up till 6 a.m. with the other people who couldn't figure out the project
either.
But like that was the fun part, was the social aspect of it. And then I got into photo. And then I was really good at it really quickly.
This was your undergrad at Oberlin?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you go on to grad school there? I'm sorry.
What not at, I went to Cranbrook.
Okay.
Which is outside Detroit.
Okay.
And, you know, so then I was like, well, okay, so I'm definitely doing this photo thing. So then when I finished school, I was like, I'll just shoot for a little while. I'll work on my portfolio and then I'll go to grad school because then I can be a college professor. Uh-huh. And then that stopped being a thing. Like you can't be a college professor anymore because they're just doing adjunct to everyone.
Okay.
You know, nobody, there's no full-time jobs.
Especially if everyone's like, fuck college in the next like 10 years, that's going to
And the colleges have been just hiring people for like $1,000 a semester, you know?
Really?
So it's like, I can't afford to make 20 grand at most a year, like as until I can get a full-time job.
Sure.
And so it's like, and I know, you know, and then I have my classmates I went to school with who are like way more talented, better writers, and they're still like really struggling. And so I'm like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do.
Right.
And then I moved back to Cleveland.
Okay. And when you moved back to Cleveland, was it like, because you used to work, was it for Scene?
No,
for Pressure Life.
No, I used to work at Whole Foods.
Whole Foods. Okay. I thought you had taken photos for some.
I've shot like freelance, you know,
gotcha,
basically
gotcha.
Like for the last, I mean, for a little bit, for a long time.
Okay.
But I've always considered myself a fine art photographer. So it's like I never really pursued the commercial side of things because I don't think, for a long time, I didn't think I had that mindset.
Mm-hmm.
But then I worked at a camera store and I've been assisting other photographers for a long time. So it's like, and then I think, you know, moving, like becoming a scenester. So hanging out, you know, in the bike scene and then the art scene and then.
Yeah.
Networking. Music scene and the comedy scene. It's like there is use for my skill set.
Absolutely.
I
hired Justin. He's done an amazing job for me. If you ever
thank
see
you.
A picture
full,
of me
full
looking
disclosure.
Like Maggie Simpson, that's he took that photo and he did an amazing fucking job of it.
Well, and then I don't know how I've always been a comedy fan, and so it's kind of weird. It's hard for me to track my trajectory where like now that I've become a person who wants to make like you know. Like premium blend style video like for the internet age.
Mm-hmm.
But I've always been a comedy fan. And then I think, I broke up with a girl and my friend had always been going to Chuckle Fuck.
Oh, yeah.
And was always trying to get me to come out. And I was like, you know, it's like it's – I work so much. I had this, you know, warehouse job that was killing me. And then I Broke up with this girl, and then I lost that job. And then I was like, well, I'm going to change some things. And then I started going to comedy.
Okay.
And then Ramon Rivas was like, you're a photographer, right? You want to take some pictures? And then that's just kind of snowballed from there.
Okay.
And then we did the sitting room only 2 years
those
ago.
Amazing. You guys should check those out. Can they find them on YouTube? Where else
they're on YouTube. Okay. Brightbox Media is my channel. And then sitting room only. There's two seasons.
Amazing quality.
Pretty
really,
good.
Really, really solid.
Yeah. Thank so you. Good.
It was fun. It was a huge undertaking. Mm-hmm. A lot of favors called in, but you know, it's pretty fun. I'm happy with the quality.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this is the struggle of any artist. I mean, you have an amazing portfolio just based off of all the shit
that you've
done. People should pay you too.
Well, it's hard. You know, people don't have money is the problem.
I know.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to be an asshole about like, oh, fucking pay. But I mean, honestly, like, we're all artists. We all like. I mean, our ultimate goal is to get paid for what we do. Mm-hmm. And so, I don't know.
I think there's like such a weird level of entitlement that people have towards the arts. And I think that it probably stems from like pirating music and movies that now people have just, their minds have changed where now they think that they are just owed it. So they don't understand when it's like, cool, yeah, I'll take your pictures. You have to pay me.
Sure.
And it's like, but why?
Right.
I don't know. I don't think that it's necessarily people are intentionally like malicious or assholes.
Sure.
I think it's just like something has changed in everyone's brains and how they process art and how they consume it.
I think because content is so widely available, they just presume that kind of content is just, they take it for granted. That it's just
that's
there.
It. Exactly. It's like, I don't know if it's, I was thinking about this the other day that what I miss about DVDs is the featurettes is because, you know, everything on Netflix is, or whatever is on demand. And so, because I used to watch the making ofs, you know.
Oh, I still
and,
do.
Well, I would if it was possible, you know. But, I mean, that stuff's like all over. That stuff is like on the website, but it's, or maybe. Or like
or
on.
Or you have to get the physical release that somebody's done. If you're just streaming something, you're not going to find it. Every once in a while, like I know Netflix did like their little after show for Stranger Things. And that was my favorite thing they did all season.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I wish they would do more of that.
Mm-hmm. It was like a walking, talking dead, right?
Yeah, you know, but it was with the Stranger Things kids. And I was like, this is great. I want to hear about how they did this. What were their experiences like? And I think that that interest just doesn't exist in a lot of people anymore. They don't care. Yeah.
Well, I think it's also, it is the immediacy. And also I think that people, or maybe it's just because of the way social media is. Like nobody really knows what goes into making anything.
Yeah.
You know, like today, you know, I spent 6 hours trying to export a 2-hour video so that it would be just big enough so that I could maximize the quality of the video that I was burning to a DVD for a school. So it's like, no one burns DVDs anymore. So that, like I have to use old software and then I have to make it all work. And then, so it's like,
that's the one thing I've really started to appreciate with doing as much like acting, performing, like podcasts, all that sort of shit is like people take for granted how much work that is and how many people have to be involved to do all that shit. And people can't afford to work for free when you have people working for that long and that hard on stuff. And it sounds so cliche when you're not directly involved in that, but it's like, I mean.
Well, anything you watch and there's a new angle. There's a different voice. You know, any of that means that there's another operator running that equipment that it has to be edited in live time.
Right.
You know, so I think the complexity of the making of it is just totally lost on people.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. My feature film is currently rendering to be exported for everything, like done, as we speak. And the amount of people that have been like, why isn't it out yet? And I'm like, do you have any idea how long it takes to edit this, to have a sound mix, to have, you know, to find music, to get the rights, to do all this stuff? And it's like, it's such an exhausting process because people have such a desire for instant gratification that they just can't understand, like, well, why can't I have it now? I want it now. And it's like, well, you have to wait.
That's not even to mention like what you have to go through for distribution and putting that stuff somewhere that people can get it and want to see it and, you know, marketing and, you know, all the kind of stuff that goes into that. Like people just take it for granted.
Well, it took us a year of editing to get out Sitting Room Only.
No shit. Wow. That's nuts.
Because we were doing it in our spare time.
Okay.
So it was me and Johnny Reese was my editor. And so he would do a rough edit, and then I would watch it, and then I would make notes, and then he would make changes, and we it would just be a back and forth like that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it took about a year, year and a half to get both seasons out.
Okay. Yeah, when you don't have money, like that's exactly what it is. I think people are so used to this. Well, I saw it in theaters in May, so why can't I buy it off on Netflix DVD, or DVD in June? And it's like, well, those people are. That's their job, like full time, 24/7. They're getting paid for it. If it's something that's independent, you're not getting paid for that. Like you got to find the time and make it work. And I don't think people have that perspective to bring it back around.
Look at you bringing it back around. Oh, I am. Circle. Well, what's so? I mean, when you started doing photography, like when was the first time you really got interested in photography? Was it before?
I don't remember a time I wasn't.
Really? You just always been into like snapping photos.
Well, I was thinking about it actually, and I remember like a lot just looking through my family's photo albums a lot, pretty often. And then I had like a Kodak
one of those
26 cameras with the flash cubes and all that. And I used to just you had to rotate the flash cube. And I something about the, you know, it's just like photography is kind of magic, especially when you're shooting on film and especially if you're doing your own developing. Because when you're in a dark room and you watch like a piece of paper turn into an image, that's like pretty magical.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it was never not something I was thinking about.
Okay. And when you started doing it, were you sort of your own critic as far as like how to improve upon it, or how did that all pan out?
Well, art school is totally different than technical or commercial training because it's more about the concepts and how you bring that across, and also the history of the medium for that purpose. Mm-hmm. So it's more about fine art is more about the ideas that you're trying to interrogate and less about the power of the image necessarily. Mm-hmm. I mean, certainly there's very powerful images, but it's all about what messages you're trying to convey. Mm-hmm. And in the commercial world, it's really a lot more technical. It's a lot more, I guess it's like still about conveying a message, but the message is like, you know,
buy this
or look at this glamour. It's a lot more mood, you know, lighting is a lot more important. What's sharp, set deck, you know, but if you're looking at fine art photography, it's all about, usually some kind of cultural criticism.
Okay. And you said, I think you mentioned earlier, like fine art, like cultural criticism, that was always more kind of your speed sort of thing. Okay. Was there something, what was your first sort of thing that you thought about that you wanted to convey with cultural criticism?
Well, in my fine art, I've always been interested in dissecting the idea of masculine identity.
Okay.
And so I was always, my mom's a women's studies professor.
Okay.
And I went to a liberal arts college. So it's like I've always been aware of these concepts around like toxic masculinity, mm-hmm. And like how it, you know, power structures and how they're problematic in society.
Mm-hmm.
I was interested in what it means to like try to define yourself as a man within that context, in the early 2000s.
Okay.
But that's a really difficult topic for a white man to handle.
Sure.
And so that's the work I'm interested in exploring. But I was never particularly successful with the images I was trying to make.
Okay.
But the other part of my practice is just documentation. I'm just a shooter. I am a editorial style, you know, documentarian. So that has a whole separate history in the art world of just, you know, looking around and for moments. Mm-hmm. And so that to me is like my journals. I use that as a sketchbook in a way, just all the stuff I'm shooting. And then I try to incorporate it, into my fine art work. But really I was like, I don't have enough life experience to be able to deal with these topics in a way that is thoughtful and doesn't shut things down or make it sound like I'm trying to shout over people's perspective. And so I was like, well, I'll just wait until I feel like I can.
Okay.
And that's been, you know, post-grad school. It's just been like, I'm going to just keep shooting and figure out what I want to do and just keep getting better at my craft.
Yeah. So in the interim, it's been more of just trying to ace the technical elements of sort of photography, or
I think, you know, it's been a lot of things. I mean, part of it is like how to, you know, art school and just college in general, but art school especially, does not teach you how to live your life and how to actually do it. You know, there's only recently is there talk even of the idea of professional practices, which is, you know, like how do you run a studio? How do you be an active art person? You know, grant writing, stuff like that. I mean, these are topics that barely got covered. Okay. It's a lot of like, you'll figure it out. And that's what I've been doing, yeah. I guess, figuring it out. And then it's also, you know, there's so many shifts in the economy. And, you know, getting older, it's like, well, what's going to make me happy? What am I good at? Mm-hmm. You know, I've sort of fallen into the video production because it's fun and I'm good at it.
Is video production part of what you learn when you go to school for that sort of thing? Or is it just kind of been...
No, I mean, you know, photo and video has got so much overlap.
Yeah.
So, and then in the technology side, you know, all these cameras started being able to take video, you know, within the last 10 years.
Would you say something I was just wondering, because I got a, I think you and I have talked about, like, I've got a Super Zoom. I think it's a Coolpix P900.
Yeah.
And I was taking really good video with it at one of my shows the other night. Do you find that... and you can kind of chime in on this too. Like a lot of people are just pretty much using one and the same, or, you know, are they people pretty much still going down the middle as far as filming is concerned, or.
What I've noticed is that the cameras that I like to shoot with, I tend to like shoot video with, mm-hmm. tend to not be the ones that I like to shoot photo with.
Okay.
And I don't know if it's just because in my brain, I think one is more cinematic than the other.
Okay.
So
they have capabilities to do both.
Yes, absolutely.
But there's ones that.
DSLR cameras were like a hot thing for a minute, and anyone who was making like a low budget film was using a DSLR. Does it work? Yeah. Does it look okay? Sure. Mm-hmm. Is it the best? No.
Okay.
And because of that, it's like I would prefer to use that for maybe like just random pictures of my friends, like something fun.
Yeah.
But I don't want to use that to make a movie ever again.
Gotcha. And I mean, kind of where do you stand on the whole?
I mean, you can use anything to do anything.
Sure.
You know, but it's...
preference-wise, what do you find?
I mean, I would rather... I mean, I want to use the tool that's right for the job.
Okay.
So that might be a DSLR. It might be a point-and-shoot film camera. It might be, you know, a $20,000 cinema camcorder.
Do cinema camcorder... I mean, like, do specific video recording devices exist still? Or are they pretty much, like, if the line's blurred a lot?
Oh, no. There's
they
still...
They definitely still exist.
There's...
Yeah.
I mean, the... Well, there's so historically there's video and then there's digital cinema.
Okay.
Video comes from a different tradition because video is TV.
Okay.
So that's all about, you know, you have a line, you have a single pixel that's being written across a screen.
Okay.
And so, and that's how video is captured for the most part. The companies that make cinema camcorders want to reproduce the look of film. So they want to be capturing a single image at a time, not a line of pixels at a time.
Okay.
So when you look at your RED cameras, your
so
ARRI.
Your
REDs,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, those, I mean, those cinema stuff is still, the least expensive cinema camcorder is going to be $20,000. Okay. And they'll go up to 200 grand. And there's ones that you can't buy, you can only rent.
Okay.
But the whole time, their baseline aesthetic is film. Because film has a specific look. The 24 frames a second, the global capture. All that stuff. Video has just gotten really good where it's almost as good okay. as that stuff, but it's still video.
Okay. So I guess it just boils down to the quality essentially of what you want, or does it really have more to do with the subject?
I would say probably the aesthetic that you want. Okay. Like, what are you trying to capture? Because like a perfect example is like one of my favorite movies of the last 5 years is Tangerine, which is shot on an iPhone 5.
Oh, wow.
And it works for what they're trying to do. They're trying to make it look like this very gritty, realistic side of the parts of Los Angeles that you don't talk about. So yeah, an iPhone 5 is perfect for
yeah.
that. If you were to use a RED, it would look too clean. It would look
okay.
too polished.
Okay.
So having the iPhone kind of adds to that character.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, maybe you may have a similar school of thought, but I've always been kind of a believer that like the camera does not make the movie. It does
okay.
not make the picture. It can help, but ultimately it's what is your eye? What are you
okay.
seeing? What
okay.
is your perspective.
Have you done a lot of feature stuff or like film? Or I mean, are you mostly just, you've done like the...
I mean, I know about it, but I haven't done it. Okay. I mean, that's a whole other world.
Would it be something you'd be interested in doing or...
It's a whole other world. Yeah. You know, I don't want to be on a job for 6 weeks and then not on a job for 18 weeks.
Okay.
You know, and... But it would depend. I mean, the when you're dealing with film production, that's a whole nother set of complexity because, you know.
Got moving.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, in video production, especially commercial video production, which is like, you know, more agency stuff, you know, people are wearing many hats and doing lots of different jobs. And when you're in a film production, everything has a different guy or girl for that.
Sure.
So someone's just making sure the camera works. And someone else is just pulling focus on that camera. And someone else is looking through that camera to make sure, you know, it's pointed at the right thing and then you're using the right lenses. And all of those people report to probably the assistant DP. And then the DP is in charge of all the cameras. So that's for every shot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then you have somebody who's the loader who's just putting memory cards into that camera. And then you have another person who's wrangling data and doing a color pass.
Okay.
So
see how much shit goes into this, people? You guys sit there and watch your fucking Avengers and you're mad, or Star Wars because it isn't what you wanted it to be. And some 1,800 fucking people work on this shit night and day. And you're, I didn't like there was blue milk coming out of this. Some titties. I don't know. Like, people are fucking assholes.
Well, it's all what happens in the editing. The editing, the editor is probably the most important position in finishing a movie.
Talk about yourselves. I'm going to go get some more alcohol.
I'll take another.
All right.
Yeah, look at you, bussing tables, being a host. So nice of you. No, I agree completely. I do think that the editor is probably the most important job. Like, whenever people talk about how film is like, oh, that's very Tarantino-esque, I always think back to how he had the same editor for many, many years.
Kubrick used the same editor for everything.
Yeah, and then
it all has a very uniform.
Then when Tarantino's editor died, I believe it was... her last project was Inglourious Basterds, and then she passed away, so she was not around for Django. And everyone was like, oh, this doesn't look right. And it's like, yeah, because it's a new editor.
Yeah.
Like, do you see, like, how important that
That's
is?
So fascinating.
But, like, what I also enjoy is because, of, like, the world of what I do and then the world of what Rustin does are, like, completely different, and everybody... I think would see it and they're like, oh, you guys do the same thing.
Yeah.
It's like, no.
That's like IT.
I never in a million years would be able to do what he does because
right.
It's just not how my brain works.
Yeah, I mean... And I mean, are you kind of the thought process that you prefer to kind of stay with more like stationary and have that sort of focus on what you do versus like moving all those moving parts that we were kind
I mean,
of
I can do whatever.
Yeah. But I mean, what is your desire? Like, what is your ultimate sort of?
Well, I want the final product to look amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I mean, like I hold myself to a really high aesthetic standard.
Okay.
And so I want the highest quality possible with the equipment available to me.
Mm-hmm.
But if there's no budget, then stills are definitely
okay.
going to be better locked or a lockdown shot because, you know, like I can't be running a camera, running sound and directing talent by myself.
Right.
You know, that's too much.
Right.
And the quality suffers. So, it's great to be on a set where there's an art director,
sure.
Stills or video, because it makes it a lot easier to focus on the messaging and making sure everything's right and focusing on the equipment or what have you. You know, I have a team of people I like to work with if I'm on a more complex project. I don't like to run the camera and direct.
Okay.
And I would prefer not to run a camera and edit. I'd rather tell somebody what I want it to look like after we've compiled all the footage.
Okay.
Because I know I'm a jack of all trades, but I'm definitely better at certain things and not as good as at certain things. Mm-hmm. And I would rather just pay a guy who's better than me who understands what I want.
Okay. So when it comes to your work so far and things that you have, you know, taken, you know, video images, that kind of thing, have you gotten to a point yet? I mean, have there been moments, notable moments throughout the timeline where you've really achieved like the aesthetic you want. You're really like, I mean, are there pieces that you're really super fucking proud of that like,
you know? Yeah. I mean, Sitting Room Only, you know, turned out really nice.
Yeah.
It's hard to I mean, that was a while ago, and I haven't been able to shoot anything at that level because there's no budgets. Right. And that was calling all my favors, so I can't do that again. Right. I think that's what people don't understand is that people will work on a project for spec, but it needs to be something that's going to be like either fun for them, it's going to be a portfolio piece, it's going to be a really interesting experience, or, you know, I mean, they've got to get something out of it.
Yeah.
And usually you can only do that once. Mm-hmm. And so people don't understand why to get, you know, that's not like a turkey operation.
Sure. One of the most revelatory things you've told me so far is that, like, the way I sort of got to know Rustin is at all these shows, I would just see him just like shutterbugging around. And like, I would be sitting there just like talking with like Jasmine and Mary, and all of a sudden he'd come up and he's like, snap. And I'm like, what the heck? You know, I'd feel like the paparazzi.
Yeah.
And then one of the things he had mentioned, he's like, yeah, you always see me taking photos, but you never see the images. And I actually thought about that. I'm like, I've seen him take 100 pictures at shows, and I don't think I've ever seen a single one. And it's because, like, you need to get paid for your work, ultimately.
Well, I think that people don't understand that it's not like I'm holding them hostage, but it's that I don't have time.
Right.
You know, and so it's like I'm taking the photos, and that's going into my archive, right. And it's really just informing the work I do after that. Because, you know, like, every day I'm trying to push out content either for my portfolio or for clients. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it, when you get burnt out, you can't then it's really difficult to sit there and be like, okay, now I'm going to work on this thing for this guy from 2 weeks ago because right. It's been so long. Mm-hmm. But it's also on the flip side interesting for me to just have an archive and then see what becomes important later on. You know, because I have so many images that you know, I'm a documentarian, and so. So certain documents are only interesting in context, and you need time and distance away from that kind of stuff for it to be interesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was a time when that's the way photography happened, is that you'd have these shooters who were just shooting. You'd send all their work to an editor, and the editor would pick one photo. You know, that's how Magnum used to work or and still does. But all the idea of this instant gratification, again, is pretty new.
Sure. Have you noticed, do you often kind of go back through your archive and see, like, I mean, like, do you, cause me personally, like, I have probably 18 flash drives at home full of like photos that I've taken that I don't get. And I mean, I'm not a professional photographer, but I don't get a chance to really go back through and look at it. I mean, is that something that you do once in a while to kind of see, just, you know, see how things have changed, how things have improved? Or, I mean, what's sort of your process?
Well, I try to keep my database up to date with keywords. So I like to go through every once in a while and just tag stuff that's in it. And then the other thing for me is that trying to figure out, because the way I shoot is very intuitive or instinctual. Mm-hmm. So I try to figure out, looking at the images, what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. So I can see the themes that I'm subconsciously drawn to.
Okay.
And try to incorporate that into how I think about taking future photographs.
Can you think of like an instance, like, is it, can you think of what intuitively makes you like want to snap a photograph?
Well, with me, I think that I'm looking for that moment when, right, like when people are kind of taking their masks off.
Sure.
And that might be when they're being real with somebody else. Mm-hmm. And you're seeing it and you get a little glimpse of it. Mm-hmm. Cause I think, to me, I think that the most interesting moment with people is when they have their guard down. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple ways to find that space. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was younger, I was a much more aggressive photographer because I didn't really know how to, you know, get in people's space.
What types of things would you photograph when you were younger?
I mean, I've always photographed people. Okay.
It's never been like still life or like nature or anything like that for the most part?
Well, sometimes it is.
Okay.
But it's usually involves some kind of like the hand of man, you know? So it'll be like, you know, I've got plenty of like photos of like trees with people's carved their initials into it and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Or like lately I've been photographing, cause I photograph bands a lot. And so I have this whole like collection of like people who are like I have photos of cell phones at shows basically. Mm-hmm. So it's just part of it's just like building an archive of like lots of the same thing.
Okay. And do you find when you go back and look through your archive, do you see changes, improvements? Has it stayed pretty?
Well, I'm a better photographer than I was.
Okay.
So that's always nice to see.
Sure.
And I'm don't, you know, there's a term for when you just take a lot of photos and hope for the best, and it's spray and pray. You just hope you get it.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's less of that. So there's less pictures. I mean, basically, I think for me, the goal is to up the quality of the hit count. So I want to, you know, if I'm taking 10 photos, if 3 are good, like that's pretty high hit rate.
Yeah, yeah.
And film, shooting film really helps you with that. Because if a roll of film is 24 or 36 exposures, you know, you're lucky to get 6 to 10 good shots.
Sure.
And
do you do your exposure yourself? Do you do a lot of that stuff? Do you have like a red?
I mean, I have so many different cameras
that
do so many different things. Okay. So it's like the reason I like film is that it's very forgiving. So it's like if you did it wrong in the camera, you're still going to probably get a photo. Mm-hmm. With digital, it's not really recoverable as much because, you know, you're dealing with signal. So there's a minimum and a maximum response to a pixel.
Okay.
But film is, because it's a physical substrate, I mean, there is a minimum and a maximum to the amount of exposure and change that can undergo these silver molecules. Mm-hmm. But at a certain point, like, it kind of falls off. So it's like, you know, T-Max 400, you can shoot under a stop or over two stops, and it doesn't matter. It'll come out.
It sounds like the predominant sort of theme of most of your work is sort of candid. It's not staged.
I do. Yeah, I'm a candid shooter.
Okay. And do you find that you prefer
the authentic is what's hot now?
Do you prefer like this when you look through your portfolio, the stuff that you've done that's candid, you prefer like the quality of what you've done with that? Do you have stuff that's staged that you enjoy? Do you do headshots? Do you do things like that? I mean, all the shit that we've collaborated on, obviously,
sure,
is staged.
Well,
but
well, it's one of those things where, and this is a question, you know, that many professional artists have to contend with, which is like, how do I do what I love and make money? You know, and I think when you make the decision to go freelance or to be a full-time artist, it's tricky because you're making a decision to always be working. Mm-hmm. You're never not working. You're never not thinking about work. Mm-hmm. But you're doing what you want to be doing.
Right.
And so you're making the decision to take what you're passionate about and also turn it into a trade and maybe your life's work.
Yeah.
And so that means like a lot of kind of mental gymnastics because – you know, it's what you're passionate about. But if someone wants to pay you to do it, well, it's not. I don't think so.
No, but that's what the. Sort
well, where else are you going to sell? Right?
Exactly.
It's like you have to shoot a couple of weddings so that you can afford to fuck off for a weekend and shoot what you actually want.
And it's also, you know, like when I had a full time job, I always thought of shooting weddings as beneath me. But really, that's because I didn't want to lose a Saturday. But you know, now that I'm freelance, like any day is any day. Well, it's also just like, you know, there's no such thing as the weekend
Saturday,
to me.
Yeah.
You know, like.
I will never forget.
Mondays are slow for me, which is nice.
We hired a guy. Do you know Ken Blaze?
Yeah.
We hired him for our wedding, and he did an amazing job.
Yeah, he's a great photographer.
But what was hilarious is I think he does, like, a lot of stuff for ESPN. Like, he does predominantly, like, a lot of, like, sports photography and stuff.
He does band stuff, too. He's a jack of all trades,
okay,
in a way.
He was amazing. I loved him, but he pissed off systematically everyone at our wedding because people were like, can you take a picture of us? And he was like, no. Like, because he was very much about candid photos.
Yeah.
And so we had aunts and uncles coming up like, what the fuck? And I was like, look, we're paying him. Like, if we go ask him. Like, that was the thing. Anything we asked him to do, like my ex-husband and I, he was like, yeah, I'll take
Well, he's not there for them.
Exactly. Yeah. But it was so funny because I think they were used to most weddings where the dude, that's all he does is wedding photography. And he's not, you know what I mean? Like, he's just
Well,
there.
My question for you, I mean, you talked about wanting to do this project with, like, toxic masculinity. And then that you're also, like, the authentic or candid photographer. Do you feel that having that vision affects how you interact with people when you're not quote unquote working?
Oh, sure. I mean, probably.
Do people know that that's your vision? Because that's the first time.
Why would anyone know that?
Yeah, no one's listening to this anyway.
No, but I mean, like, yeah, why would.
I was gonna say, I guess for you personally.
It's like, hard to wear woke and no one believes it.
Yeah,
you know, anyway.
Everybody woke these days.
I remember.
I love how hard you just rolled your eyes.
But like it like came out of my mouth. Like Gina Davis in Beetlejuice. It just rolled and came right on out.
So you're saying you haven't had, I mean, it has or hasn't affected like.
What has or haven't?
Subjects, what kind of what you were
like,
saying.
Does it affect your, like, your perspective on how you interact with people?
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah. I mean, I think about it all the time.
Really? Have you, I mean, you were kind of saying that that was sort of your goal, from sort of a social commentary thing. Is it still kind of your main
yeah. goal? I mean, you got to live it, yeah. right?
Yeah.
Well, then I guess also just with the fact that you do photograph candidly, so I'm assuming that you've gotten really good at being able to gauge when people have let their guard down. So does that also affect your interactions when, you know, you may not be necessarily shooting a camera, but you subconsciously pick up on those traits? Or is that something that you can kind of separate when you're not shooting?
I think it sort of depends, because sometimes it's not up to me. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just the way my brain processes things, you right. know? And so sometimes I can ignore it or turn it off or whatever. Mm. But sometimes it's just happening. I mean, but it's also, I mean, I think it's also people pick up on it, because I get told a lot of secrets because it's funny because I'm a gossip, but I don't talk about anyone's business. So right. it's like I only talk about what everybody knows about already.
Right. right.
But yeah, like, there's plenty of times people are like, I've never told anyone this. And I'm like, you know, I've heard that a lot.
I get that.
You just got one of those faces. I think tell you things.
It's these deep, deep, weird eyes. You know?
Deep, weird eyes. I don't think they're weird.
They're deep. They're definitely lasery. You know?
Yeah, laser. I could see that.
I think they're very like crisp and glovery.
Yeah. Have you gotten that before?
Every once in a while.
Yeah. What did I tell you? Anders Holm. I told you look like Anders Holm.
I get
Holm.
That. I get okay. Jerry O'Connell, Daniel Tosh.
Oh, shit. I
Tosh.0 when I was real skinny.
I don't really... I mean, that's not an I just don't really get
my brain is just that. Like permanently like Crispin Glover Crispin in Glover, Friday the 13th specifically.
Okay. I just think about that clowns video.
Oh.
Guy's crazy.
Mm-hmm. So I mean, do you worry at any point that you might have to move on from the Cleveland scene so that you can be more objective just because of the connection you have with your subjects at all? Is that something? I don't really know anything about it. I'm actually legitimately asking.
What do you mean? Because I know everybody or something?
Well, yeah, because I mean, I feel like everybody knows you. I feel like you're very much adored.
I mean, I only have like 1,500 Facebook friends, you know, and there's
that's six. Twice what I
And there's like six.
Three times what
there's
I
like 600,000 people in Cleveland. So I don't feel like I know everybody.
Okay. So, but I just know, like, I see you. Like, I see you at least once a week. So I'm just wondering, like, what other circles do you. I'm the one. I'm sneaking on you. I got my, like, camera.
I'm in the art scene. And.
I forget. You had a. Was it a show or you were a part of a show?
I, like, organized a little, like, gallery thing in my studio.
Yeah.
Just of, like, people whose work I'm seeing. That I wanted to see all in one place.
Okay, basically. So you just actually had people come and bring their work to the
I just office. I asked like 10 people to be in it and just submit some pieces.
Right on.
It's already down. It was fun.
That's cool.
My friend made a giant saltine that looks like fleshy.
Oh,
it's
cool.
Very cool.
That's fucking shit.
I'm going to try to buy it from her.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Aw, that's cool. I feel like somebody's here. Hi, Lizzie Jizzy. You look cute. That's our next co-host. So overall, I mean,
moving on? Is that
no,
I didn't
no,
answer
no.
that
no,
question.
No, you still have a good 15 minutes.
No, I meant you meant moving on from Cleveland.
Yeah, I mean, do you foresee yourself being here for a while?
I mean, I don't feel tied to anywhere. I was born in California.
Okay.
I grew
what
up
part?
Oakland.
Okay.
I grew up outside of Baltimore. My family's from Philly. I've been to school. I went to school here and outside Detroit and in Boston for a year. Mm-hmm.
How long have you been here?
I've lived here since I finished grad school, so that would have been 11.
Okay.
And then for 3 years between 2006 and 2009.
Okay.
So about 10 years on and off.
That's about how long I've been here too.
But I'm not tied. I mean, you know, it depends on what I want to keep doing.
Yeah.
And what opportunities present themselves. Because it might be, you know, move to Atlanta where the comedy scene's really crazy. And there's like this... A new, you know, film scene that's really happening.
Is it cool that I park right there?
We block record, everyone. Sorry, the magic is gone. It's okay, Dan. You're good. You're totally fine. I'm just glad when guests show up on time. Well, that's the thing, because I was reading up on... I was reading up on Jenna Fisher's... she has a book that just came out about, like, you know, becoming an actor and all the kind of shit that goes along with that. And it's funny. She was talking about where all the... the SAG offices are, and it's like there's like four in LA, and then there's one in Atlanta because yeah. Atlanta is mm-hmm. becoming
it's
like
exploding
the new,
right now.
Yeah, like the new film
made in Georgia.
Yeah, yep. Exactly. Archer, that's a Archer has that whole thing. Yeah,
I know a lot of people down there.
Yeah,
a lot of people are moving there. Just like the tax incentives are so good that. Okay.
The weather is nice.
You yeah. can kind of make Atlanta look like
the traffic
a lot of
is terrible,
places.
So it's almost
traffic
like
is
LA.
Just like it's almost like LA. It's like East Coast LA. Like, that's actually really interesting.
What's also really interesting too is that you think about kind of like that coast mentality because like they will like movies come through Cleveland to shoot pretty frequently,
sure.
but they're not going to cast you if you're in Cleveland. They'll
no.
cast somebody from Cleveland in New York and then bring them
and
back.
And they're bringing almost all their own equipment
yep.
and their own people. So they're yep. not doing much hiring in town.
No, not at all. Which is one of
the indies do, but not the big ones.
That's one of the issues that I always have with SIFF every year is that they tend to favor films that were from LA or New York based production companies that just happen to shoot in Cleveland,
not actual
Cleveland filmmaking, which is always really strange. Like there's like this weird, craving for Midwest places to like, we're better
be
than
the
this.
Backdrop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's also, you know, we've got a nice deserted city center.
Mm-hmm.
So that's always, you know, that's what was in the Avengers. And then, the Shoreway they used for Winter Soldier for some
yeah.
fight scenes. And then.
Have they shot any more Avengers here? I know they did Winter Soldier. They did.
I think they did a little bit of Spider Man.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because
I
know Detroit
bits.
Got a lot too. Like
Detroit was getting a lot of stuff when I was in school there, but they didn't follow through on any of their tax incentives. So that's why people started coming here.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I don't know that we have done a good job with that either.
No. it's not been great. And then the other problem is just, like, the design of Cleveland is inherently stupid.
Okay.
Like, why is the queue across the street from Progressive Field? Mm. Who thought of this?
Yeah.
And it's also right next to, like, House of Blues and all these other major areas. Like, if...
It's clustered.
Like, one of my friends tweeted the other day that if... There was a disabled vehicle on 90-480 in the Shoreway. The whole city would shut the fuck down.
I saw that.
And it's like, that's insane to me. Like,
yeah.
if there are three accidents, the whole city's fucked.
That was what happened. Was it last... It was either last summer
just take the surface streets.
It was the last summer or 2 years ago.
St. Lorraine, Carnegie Bridge, the whole way.
I lived in... This is inside baseball for Cleveland people, but I lived
Ride your
in,
bike. Just so you'll be fine.
Okay. Yeah, 3 months a year you can ride your goddamn bike, even though we have bike lanes 24/7.
Hey, man, I ride in the winter.
Do you?
Sometimes.
Really?
I used
you're,
to
more. You're a brave man.
You're hardcore. Holy shit. Yeah, no, but I lived in Playhouse Square, and there was a day where there was literally...
Like the Hanna Theater? Where were you?
Well, I was in Sphere.
You lived underneath the chandelier.
I literally...
Just like you,
I just had a tent
camped out underneath the chandelier.
I lived on top of the chandelier.
Hey, can I get 75 cents?
I was like a fancy Oscar the Grouch.
You just perched up there and then yelled at everyone a dynamite burger.
Hey, you guys, can I get a burger? But like, what happened was there was an accident where somebody died on 71, and it was that bad. And then there was an accident where someone, like a trooper, got killed on 90.
Oh, I remember that.
So both 71 and 90 got shut down because like there were two dead people on it. And I remember at 7 p.m., there was so much fucking traffic. I was like, I had to walk to Hilton, and I got there, like, way faster than I would have ever walked, like, would have if I were driven. Like, it was just, it's insane
yeah,
to me
that's,
how the city is set up.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And what ends up happening is that when films do come here and they do have to shut down one of those roads for a chase scene or whatever, it just, everything gets so congested
yeah.
and so bad.
Yeah.
Didn't they... Cleveland make like $20 on closing on the Shoreway for
the
like 3 months
I was
or something.
About. You talk
yeah.
about tax incentives, but like really, what did we get out of any
Nothing.
Of this? Yeah.
Well, it's like right now, it just cracks me up to know that like Edgewater Live is coming back and the Shoreway is down to one lane, and I'm like,
I saw your
this is
post on
the
that.
Stupidest thing in the world.
And that's the thing. I live in like the flats downtown borderish, and so for me, like the shore, like literally the Shoreway is outside my parking lot, and I used to be able to turn right out of my parking lot and go right onto the Shoreway. That entrance is closed now, and like everything's down to one lane, and I'm like, what is the point of any of this? Like,
just
why
take the Detroit Superior Bridge everywhere?
Give it a year, it'll all be supposedly nicer. We'll see.
Skeptical Jess is skeptical.
But then the RTA is just going to collapse.
Yeah.
So then it's a whole other thing. This is getting very inside baseball.
So the lesson is, if you don't live in Cleveland and you're listening to this, stay where you are.
Try Traffic is terrible. Don't ever come.
Yeah, like it's fine when the traffic is terrible when you live in Atlanta.
Or if you do move here, buy a duplex and then let one of us live next door to you.
Yes. Get a bike.
Get a bike.
Not a fixie, an actual bike.
What's wrong with fixie? Huh?
I have a fixie, and that's the problem, is that I try to ride the fixie, and it's like,
it's totally doable.
I need some gears.
I have a fixie.
My bicycle. Did that Queen?
Yes.
Why do they have so many songs about bikes? I know two.
I think it's just the two.
It's that and Fat Bottom Girls mentions bikes.
Okay. That's
bikes!
Bikes!
It just mentions
bikes. Get on your bikes and ride.
Bikes. Get on your bikes and ride! All right, so ultimately, mm-hmm. I mean, do you see yourself, I mean, I know this is kind of like hard to predict, but is the way things are sort of going in the last decade, do you see yourself being here for a little bit longer, or is it just kind of wherever the wind takes you?
It's wherever the wind takes me.
Yeah.
I do want to direct the standalone Colossus movie.
What is that? I don't know anything.
He's an X-Man.
Oh, he's an X-Man?
Yeah. Oh, perfect.
Oh.
I think X-Man. I could handle that.
Do you actually legitimately want to get involved in, like, film direction someday?
I like, sure, why not?
Yeah, fuck it. Why not?
I mean, if Ryan Reynolds can make Deadpool.
Yeah. I know he starred, but, like, was he involved in, like, the production?
Oh, he made that whole thing happen.
Okay, I had no idea.
Yeah, he's been wanting to play Deadpool, like, his whole life. All he played Deadpool once already in the, I think, Wolverine 4.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, like, it's real bad.
It's real small.
It's just real bad.
Oh, it's really? Like, and no one saw it, and so it's just...
People saw it. People saw it. Still Hugh Jackman.
I'm personally a big fan of his first Marvel appearance in Blade Trinity, because he gets to say cock-juggling thunder cunt with such vigor. It's wonderful.
He does make that movie.
He really does.
I love his Twitter. His Twitter makes my
he's
life.
Pretty great.
He makes me really happy.
No, I would like to... I want to do a multicam comedy special. Like, a big one.
When it actually can be funded sort of thing.
Yeah.
I mean...
yeah, I'd like to get paid.
When people have money, when comics have money,
if there's going to be four cameras and a dolly shot and a jib, then I would
A jib comedy shot?
I had to run the jib on Sitting Room Only, and I did a serviceable job.
I was gonna say, you're fucking.
You can barely tell.
It's so good. It's so good. No, but
really, you want a guy for that.
Yeah.
Today, Rustin posted something about, like, I had a dream that people loved my work and they wanted to pay me for it, and I was like, woo! Like, laugh. Because that was the thing. Like, as soon as I hired him, I was like, I'm going to pay you money to do these.
I know
things.
It's funny because I don't know how. I needed to differentiate somehow as maybe a hashtag between, like, this is the work I got paid to do.
Yeah,
and
this is me helping a buddy. Yeah.
And this is me helping a buddy. Because it's like, people, you know, the turnaround time is a lot faster if there's money involved.
Like, he came and did my first couch gags a couple weeks ago, and I'm like, can I have this by Friday? And he was like, yeah, fuck it.
The amount of times that, like, I've offered my friends that are artists money, like, hey, I need this graphic design. Can you do this? Here's money. And they're like, you're paying me?
Money?
Like, it's like they've been living in a cave for so long and somebody's finally giving them food. And it's like, I didn't have to forge this myself.
I didn't have to ask.
It's like, no, I'm going to pay you. It's
and I get it. Like, most people who are involved in, like, arts, if that's all that they do, which is, you know, that's the thing I ultimately feel like that's my failing, is that, like, you know, comedy's my side gig. And then there's this job that pays all the other bills. But then, you know, most people devote all of their time to comedy, which means ultimately...
I don't know if most people do.
Really? See, I feel like that's where my...
They're just trying to make you feel bad because you actually have an income.
I feel like I'm terrible.
They're all baristas or waitresses and they're fucking pissed.
Well, this has been a great episode.
So,
I mean, everyone needs to pay their bills, you know?
Yeah. And that's... Well, that's the thing. I think the other thing I forget, too, is that everyone is 10 to 15 years younger than me on average. And I've been, you know, I mean, when you're 36, you're going to have.
Also, and if you didn't go to college, then you don't have that, you know.
I have to pay this off.
$400 to $1,500 a month.
Well, that was the thing. I went to college so long ago, it's paid off now. And that was the other thing. When you go to college, I don't know with Oberlin if you experienced the same thing, but when you go to, like, a state school 15, 20 years ago, my tuition wasn't even a fraction of what tuition is now. You know what I mean? Because that's, you and I were talking about
it. Still a shitload
of
money.
And I was like, I paid like fucking $25,000 and my student loans. You're like, double that. And that's what people pay now. And I was like, oh, shit.
Oh, yeah, now it's like that. 70
that's
or
like,
80.
Right.
That's like a
year.
Elizabeth's like gesturing $30,000.
It's a triple it.
Triple it? Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
Okay. It's, Jesus Christ.
Like, I look at my private
loans. Capitalism's the problem, people.
Story. Fuck capitalism.
This took a right turn. Hard right turn.
I think you mean a hard left turn.
Hard left.
Or a red turn.
All the Marxists are trying to, what is this?
I want to make it clear that I'm a socialist, not a communist.
See, I don't understand the difference. That's clearly state schools are not great for you, because I don't fucking know.
Here's, I'll break it down for you, which is like, yes, the please. Free market is fine if you're talking like electronics, TVs, you know, but it's like, I don't think you should live or die or eat or not eat or have a house or not have a house based on market conditions.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Yeah. But like, if it's M&Ms or if it's Skittles, if it's Coke or Pepsi,
right?
You know, let's let the market decide.
Guns
that.
Or butter.
Guns or butter.
That's all I remember from my economy class that I had, or economics class that I had to
What's
take.
The utility of butter?
I don't know. I mean, obviously, guns are like at an all-time. All right,
let's not. That's a whole other.
We're going down another rabbit hole here. We got
cold,
wrap
dead
up.
Hands.
We got to wrap this up. I want to thank so much our guest, Rustin McCann, for being
Thanks
here.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, where can we find you on social media? Do you have any projects or anything coming up?
Oh, my. Yes.
Okay.
But so many. Too much to think about.
This is probably going to air in the beginning of June. Hi, Ty.
Hello.
So if you've got anything coming up before
I mean,
then.
You know, I would love it if everyone would like and subscribe on YouTube and do all the YouTube things
Brightbox
for Brightbox Media.
Media.
B-R-I-T. And then, B-R-I-T, Box Media.
Okay.
I believe there will be some upcoming Teach These Devils content that I'll be producing.
Right on.
And then Tim Cornette and I are also working on maybe a vodcast. Is that what they are
Video
called
podcast?
These days? That's right.
I guess a vodcast, because they don't like the word vlog anymore.
Damn blogs and vlogs.
V-blog.
V-blogs.
We're going to have it's going to be on LiveJournal. So just, no, it's not.
I was like, is that
I was hoping
banned?
For
no
something.
Yeah. Angel Fire is on a website.
Check my GeoCities, okay?
GeoCities.
And then
go
it's
to
just,
your Netscape Navigator.
Is it your hometown.aol.com?
It is. And then just Rustin McCann on Instagram is your best bet.
At Rustin McCann. Beach, you were a fabulous co-host. Thank you so much for doing this.
You're very welcome.
What would you like? I know you've got Powerbomb coming out soon. Is there anything you want to promote?
Powerbomb's not coming out. Powerbomb's going into festivals.
Just kidding.
It's done, but it's going into festivals, so you're not going to see it.
Just fucking look up Powerbomb movies. Just do it.
You can find me on Twitter. I'm verified. Just my name, BJ Colangelo. There's a lot of GIFs, a lot of self-deprecating humor on there, as well as my film production company, Sickening Pictures. We're shooting a bunch of stuff this summer,
Sweet.
Which is cool. And if you want to hang out with me in person, I do host a monthly screening series at the Capitol. It's usually the second or third Thursday of the month, depending on what we got. This is coming out in June. Then we will be showing To Hell and Back, which is a documentary about Kane Hodder. Kane Hodder, you will know him better as Victor Crowley in the Hatchet franchise, as well as the latter films of Friday the 13th as Jason Voorhees.
Oh, yeah.
He's like an awesome horror figure. He's also a burn victim, so it talks about a lot of his philanthropic work as a burn victim, as well as being a guy that's been in a shitload of things, but you don't know who he is. Kind of like Doug Jones, but the slasher version.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
BJ is infinitely more interesting than me. I don't really have much going on except my regular showcases, the first and third Sunday of every month at Skidmark Garage. It is called Couch Gags. It is at 7 p.m. every first and third Sunday, and you just have to bring some change to get in. You can bring dogs, you can bring booze, you can even vape substances, which are decriminalized here in Ohio. Also, I am at Epic Fall, EPICFAUL, on the Twitter and Instagram, and you can also check out all of our events at SX1 Entertainment on Facebook. I've decided to do away with the sound effect for this season, because last time we were like scrambling for sound effects, and I was like, this is just awkward. I'm like listening to the podcast, and I'm like, I'm just coming up with random shit. So we're gonna, there we go. That's my jalapeno chips.
Yeah, hot Foley action.
I'm gonna eat a shit ton of those when we get off the air here. I want to thank everybody for being involved, and Kate, love you. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.